Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about how to heal. And chicken is not a part of that. A new analysis shows you why chicken is harmful. Also today, the nutrient called NAC, N-acetylcysteine. It can help you, as can curcumin and vitamin D, but a special way with the brain, I'll deal with that. Also, exposure to the metal tungsten can raise your risk of a stroke. How's that possible? Tungsten's everywhere, in computers, cell phones. Also, zinc protects the blood-brain barrier from the effects of aluminum. Ah, and mentioning aluminum, good news. Due to all the grassroots efforts down in Chile, plus the people in our audience who shared the three different documentaries, Vaccine Nation, Autism, Made in USA, and The Silent Epidemic, there has now been a complete ban on mercury in vaccines. I'll tell you about that. It was voted in by their Congress in a completely unanimous approval, 84 votes in favor, and none against, and only five abstained. So that's good. So we'll show you what happens when people share information. You get a documentary, you watch it, pass it on, put it up, post it. It's there as a public service. It's there for all of us to benefit from. My guest in the second part of our program will be Larry Doyle. Larry's going to be talking about his time as a true Wall Street insider. Who is he? Well, he's a former mortgage-backed securities trader. First Boston, Bear Stearns, Union Bank of Switzerland. Yeah, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase. And in fact, he was the national sales manager for securitized projects. How could someone with that in their background come on this show and talk about, well, let's see what he talks about. I've got some interesting things to discuss with him. The Wall Street conspiracy to cripple the global economy today. And my response from a commentary that I have written last night, as well as the editorial staff of Alternet and Lynn Stewart Paramore from Alternet on the Obama policies and failures that make the United States citizen angry, and also about all those jobs that were told, well, do a good day's work and you'll be rich like everyone else. You think? I don't. Let's begin. The latest study on chicken. This is from Elizabeth Rettner of Natural Society. Quote, every year Americans buy approximately 83 pounds of chicken per person. I don't buy any, so someone's eating my chicken. With a country that's so crazy for poultry, you'd think the consumer would hold the producers accountable, demanding only the safest chicken possible. But according to a new analysis from Consumer Reports, quote, nearly all chicken, 97% tested, is tainted with harmful bacteria. Consumer Reports tested more than 300 chicken breasts purchased at stores across the country and found nearly all of them to be contaminated with potentially harmful bacteria. And what it had fecal contaminants. Half the chickens tested had also one bacterium resistant to three or more common antibiotics. That's a problem. Now, of course, the chicken producers would remind you that most bacteria can be effectively eliminated with proper handling and cooking. Heating meat at 165 degrees will reduce the risk of cross-contamination. That assures you that you won't get sick, but antibiotic-resistant bacteria discovered by Consumer Report is concerned with whether you're cooking the meat right or not. In fact, just a few months ago, the CDC released a report cautioning against the threat of antibiotic-resistant infections. Now, how bad is it? When I wrote Body Pollution back in 1974, I had a chapter on antibiotics being fed at that time in very high doses, it's only gotten worse. And a scientist from Rutgers University said that we're going to see an antibiotic-resistant microorganisms. Well, we've seen it for about the last 12 years, and it's only getting worse. And that is a big problem. 2 million Americans get ill each year from antibiotic-resistant infections. 23,000 die every year. And so that's not good. So here's one of the reasons to rethink eating chickens. Quote, our tests reveal that superbugs can be found in about half of the chickens we tested from stores across the country. Our test results found 49.7% of our samples contained at least one multi-drug-resistant bacterium, and 11% had at least two. By the way, the multi-drug-resistant bacteria are defined as those that are simply resistant to three or more classes of drugs that would normally be susceptible to, meaning drugs that would kill the bacteria. This time, they don't kill the bacteria. The bacteria could kill you. Quote, the bacteria we found were significantly more resistant class of antibiotics approved by the FDA for chicken production than those not. So we're killing every year from bacteria 23,000 people. Now that's what we know of. And these official statistics are always on the low side. So don't eat chicken. How simple is that? Hence, you don't eat the bacteria and you don't eat the antibiotics that they're fed, which makes you more susceptible. On Sunday night, there was a piece about parents who had children who had been diagnosed with mental conditions. There was no help for them, and the problem was that many of them had taken them to the emergency room so many times that they couldn't even count. And the kids were acting out, but they had no other place to put them, and insurance wasn't covering it. So it was the dilemma. Here is the problem. There are multiple studies that show that you could help a child diagnosed with any form of mental illness substantially help them. For example, with schizophrenia, the first true placebo-controlled studies using a nutrient in psychiatry was done by Dr. Abram Hoffer and Osmond using niacin. And they repeated it repeatedly, and it was published. And niacin is the vitamin B3. It's the flush vitamin, where you get the flush. But they found that by giving it to people diagnosed with schizophrenia, it was able to control their symptoms, so they didn't need the meds. And I interviewed Dr. Hoffer many times. When he was in New York, he would drop by the institute where I was doing research, and we'd have long talks about this. And he also, I introduced him to Linus Pauling's work, and at the very beginning of when Pauling was getting in. And then I said, why don't you try vitamin C and niacin together? So now there's holistic psychiatrist and holistic neurologist, like Dr. Martin Feldman in New York, who have been using different nutrients to help people with different behaviors. This is just one example. And this, by the way, is from the American Medical Association, their journal, Archives of General Psychiatry. Researchers from the University of Minnesota School of Medicine reported that supplementing the amino acid NAC and acetylcysteine helps reduce a condition in which women, men, and even pets engage in compulsive hair pulling that results in noticeable hair loss. And it also helps other compulsive behavior. Now, NAC is non-toxic, easy to tolerate, and generally about 1,500 to 2,000 milligrams. And this was actually a double-blind study. So it was a placebo-controlled study. So it worked. Well, there's just one example. Well, how would it work? Why? Well, it's simple. N-acetylcysteine appears to work by affecting the glutamate system, which is the largest neurotransmitter system in the brain. Quote from the article, pharmacologic modulation of the glutamate system may prove to be useful in the control of a range of compulsive behaviors, end quote. So here we have something. Let's just pull back and look objectively. We have the largest medical association and the most powerful and the most respected in the United States, the American Medical Association, publishing in a peer-reviewed mainstream journal, the Archives of General Psychiatry, specifically affecting psychiatrists who are the ones who primarily see people with psychiatric disorders. And it's a simple nutrient, non-toxic, non-patentable, but it works. Did you hear it mentioned anywhere? No. So they were coming on 60 Minutes, unfortunately not aware of the help that they could receive. But I have hundreds of articles on how what you eat, what you drink, how you think, what you take in supplements can directly impact your behavior. I can't tell you how many individuals have been brought to me by families, even physicians. Manic depression, bipolar, ADHD, autism, and a year later, these people have made such improvements that they're considered normal. There was no medical intervention, but there was an intervention. It was getting rid of all the things that create biochemical and imbalances and replacing them with something that was healthier. Here's just another example from the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. That's your mainstream journal. A major study, and it was about vitamin D and curcumin together offering brain health potential. Quote, a combination of vitamin D and curcumin from turmeric may boost the immune system and help to clear the protein plaques linked to Alzheimer's. That's in this new study. From the study, quote, we hope that vitamin D and curcumin, both naturally occurring nutrients, may offer new preventative and treatment possibilities for Alzheimer's disease. That's according to Dr. Milan Viola from the University of California at UCLA. So that's with Alzheimer's. Again, that's a brain condition. And how does it work? Relatively simple. Monocyte cells, which transform into macrophages and in turn boost the immune system, were isolated from the blood samples and of the Alzheimer's patients, and then they saw the impact of these nutrients, and it was substantial. Virtually everyone that I work with who has a brain condition, either Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia, ALS, I'm making sure that they get chelation, natural chelation, vitamin D, curcumin, a lot of other things, but at least this shows the evidence is there. Now, we live in a very polluted environment, and there are a lot of metals, a lot of toxins, 80,000 man-made chemicals that have not been tested for safety. We're exposed to. This is from the University of Exeter in the United Kingdom. Quote, 8,600 Americans were measured for tungsten, and because it increases the risk of stroke. Now, where do we get tungsten? We get it from consumer items, cell phones, computers, military products, industrial manufacturing. And what they found is that people with higher tungsten levels in the body had double the normal risk of stroke. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Plus One. So my suggestion, the next time you get your blood analyzed for heavy metals, have tungsten, T-U-N-G-S-T-N, measured. You don't want a stroke. You wouldn't know that it's in there. Once you know that you have it, we can get it out. It's not that difficult. It can come out through chelation. One of the things we don't want in our body is aluminum, but it's one of the most abundant minerals in the earth. As a result, we get too much of it. When you have your deodorants, that generally has aluminum in it. When you drink from aluminum can, you're getting aluminum. When you're cooking, you can get a lot of aluminum. When you get a vaccine, more aluminum. So we got aluminum, and aluminum concentrates in the brain, and that can cause brain damage. And because aluminum is ubiquitous as both an environmental and industrial chemical, it's impossible to avoid. But it is a neurotoxin. This is from China Medical University, published in the peer-reviewed journal Neuroscience, found that zinc, yes, this simple mineral, can prevent aluminum from crossing the blood-brain barrier, thereby preventing brain damage. Now, though aluminum is highly toxic, our kidneys are fortunately able to flush most of it out of our bodies, given enough time, and liquids, especially cabbage juice, watermelon juice, and lemon juice. Those are good at flushing it out. However, aluminum also has a tendency to build up in both the bone and the brain, and people with impaired kidney function are at a high risk. So according to a review conducted by researchers from the University of Kentucky Medical Center and published in the journal Neurotoxicology, aluminum is definitely capable of crossing the blood-brain barrier, and that increases the effectiveness of cell-destroying oxidation, and that in turn causes damage that mimics the effects of Alzheimer's or can cause all forms of behavior problems in children. So every time they give a child any vaccine that contains aluminum, that's going right to the blood-brain barrier. That's going to the brain. And then they wonder why we have an epidemic of brain dysfunction in children. It's not due to a blood-brain. It's not due to a biochemical imbalance. It's due to a heavy metal toxic reaction. Now, unlike aluminum, which is strictly toxic, zinc is capable of playing both health and disease-promoting functions in the brain. In fact, zinc is the trace metal that naturally occurs in the brain in the highest concentrations. And researchers know for sure that zinc plays an important role in maintaining healthy proteins, including brain proteins. It also plays a critical role in neurological signaling pathways, possibly even acting directly as a neurotransmitter. So you want to make sure you have your zinc in your diet, but it also will protect, according to this Chinese study, protect you from having aluminum that you don't want get into the brain. That's our health and nutrition segment. Now, I want to do a shout out to all the consumer activists, the grassroots support, on behalf of getting mercury out of vaccines in Chile. This is just in from the Vaccine Liberation Army. They do a really good job. Quote, thimerosal banned in Chilean vaccines. A new law is proud to announce that on January 15, 2014, a law regulating the use of thimerosal in vaccines was unanimously approved by the Congress. The Bill 7036-11, which eliminates mercury from most all vaccines, is the end of a successful legislative process that brought all political parties together to the conclusion that our population is to be honored. The next and last legislative step is the Chilean president's signature on the law. And so the next person taking over as president of Chile happens to be Michelle Bachelet, a pediatrician and former public health World Health Organization associate. So hopefully that person comes from rich and elite group, and they tend to be pro-pharmaceutical. Let's hope that the current president signs it before he leaves office. But also, one more reason why, when you see the VAC, all the different documentaries we have posted, watch it, realize it's there to use as a educational tool, and then share it with other people. For example, just in the last few weeks, 720,000 people have watched the latest documentary, and it's all over the place. Keep sharing it. That's how we help the GMO movement to get labeling. That's how we help the vaccine movement get the truth out. From our environmental segment today, yesterday, I was driving and I had the radio on and I wanted to hear, what is Sean Hannity going to be saying about the Arctic vortex? Well, he didn't disappoint. He had on this meteorologist, and who was talking about that there is no truth to global warming, etc. Yes, the temperatures are slightly warmer, but look at this freeze, and they start talking about temperatures, and Sean Hannity kept mentioning it is 20 below, 30 below, 50 below, etc., not including wind chill in different parts of America. That's all true. So this is a message for Sean and the meteorologist. Yes, what we experienced is affected by global warming. The vortex is nothing more than a spinning flow of fluid, like slowly spinning top. It's more or less centered over the North Pole and Siberia. And winter to winter, it will shift a little bit. It'll flow a little bit more in one direction than the other. And this year, it shifted down towards Canada and the United States. However, the Arctic warming alters the heat balance between the North Pole and the equator, and that in turn drives colder winds down from the northern hemisphere on the jet stream, leading to extreme temperatures. And while it's exceptionally cold in North America, yes, in Scandinavia, they're having unusually mild winters, and things are even mild in lower Europe. There is what is called the Arctic paradox, or warm Arctic, cold continents, and the Arctic is having a warmer winter. In December, Prudhoe Bay north of the Arctic Circle was 39 degrees, unheard of. Australia, which has summer right now, is one of the hottest summers, if not the hottest summer ever in their recorded history. Temperatures have reached 125 degrees. Forest fires are everywhere. Water is drying up. It's going to be uninhabitable, Australia. It's simply not sustainable. And yet you can say, well, what does it have to do with the hottest summer and hottest year in history in Australia and the warmest recorded in December above the Arctic Circle? And now this cold vortex, they're all connected, because you can't look at a single weather pattern. You have to look at the whole world, because the weather is connected worldwide. When you tear down rainforests in South America, you create drought in South America. When you have excessive drilling, you create excessive heat. When you have concentrations of population overusing systems, like in the United States, we represent only about 4% of the world's population, but 27% of its total energy use, we consume the most. So we create an enormous amount of heat. China, Russia, India, Germany, and the United States, we're the largest users of energy, and hence we're the largest polluters. And yet no one wants to take responsibility. The fact is that scientists from all over the world have reported that global warming will bring extreme weather conditions. Last year, 123,000 unique extreme conditions occurred that had never occurred before. In the United States, over 13,000. So we will have increases in storms and typhoons and tornadoes and droughts and cold. We'll have extreme cold and extreme hot, extreme rain, extreme dry. So those who stay in climate change denialism, the GOP and their supporters, and even the corporate Democrats, all you have to do is look at the actual science and pull back and look at everything, and it's all interrelated. It's simply physics 101. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We have a lot to share. Going to talk about inflammation signals and how to turn them off. And also my guest, in about 10 minutes now, Larry Doyle, is going to talk about the Wall Street conspiracy to cripple the global economy. Is Larry a conspiratorialist? Well, he's a former mortgage-backed securities trader with First Boston, Bear Stearns, Union Bank of Switzerland, a J.P. Morgan Chase. Oh, no, he's an insider's insider. So he's going to tell us what all whistleblowers should know. And then some commentaries before him. But before we go there, I have some new stuff to share with you today. First of all, we have not had a special on greens and grains because we've been out of it. And so our big greens and grains is back, and it's on a terrific special today. This special would normally cost $120 for you today. It's $59.95, so you're saving $60. Why greens and grains? Well, because when I invented green stuff, and it was the first product of its kind anywhere, I wanted something that was kosher. This is Circle K kosher. Vegan, this is vegan. And that had all the different seeds and sprouts and greens, probiotics that were important for us. And I found I couldn't put them all in one jar. I tried, but what I found is when I would put them all in one jar, it didn't work because I had to dilute it down. So instead, I simply separated the ingredients in two. I put half the ingredients in green stuff and half the ingredients in greens and grains. So here's what you're getting in greens and grains. You're getting alfalfa, organic flaxseed, kamut, oak grass, pumpkin seeds, quinoa sprouts, kamut sprouts, spelt sprouts, amaranth sprouts, probiotics, yucca, ginger root, chia seeds, Panax ginseng, bromelain, five types of sea vegetables, 8 billion probiotics, and mixed carotenoids. And it's got the cherry pineapple juice, sweetened by stevia. So if you love a pineapple cherry flavor, you got it, because it comes from cherry pineapple juice. And that's all natural. And there's natural sweetener there. So this is just a superstar. I take this every day. Every day I take green stuff, greens and grains, red stuff, berry blast, supremacy, muscle, and my heavenly aloe. I make sure I get those wherever I'm traveling. I got my packages. I take them. If I only took red stuff and didn't take berry blast, I wouldn't be getting the full spectrum, but I do. So that's why you should be taking your greens and grains every day. Because just be realistic. Have you looked at the scientific literature on pumpkin seeds and saw what's in there with organic flax? Look under quinoa sprouts. Mind you, these are sprouts. They're all gluten-free. Amaranth sprouts, spelt sprouts, kamut sprouts. All these different sea vegetables that you haven't heard of before. The alaria and fennel I've got in there also. And I've got four different types of probiotics. Laminaria, sea vegetable. And the Ascophyllum, sea vegetable. And Dulse. So I've got sea vegetables, multiple. Probiotics, multiple. And ginger, and chia seeds, and fennel. They're all in here. This is just, and it's Circle K kosher. And it's vegan. So this is a superstar. Now here's what you get that is really fun because it's brand new. Before I left on my trip to finish all my filming, I decided since I hadn't done a new self-empowerment documentary in 2 years, I did some. I did most of them without an audience. Two I did with an audience. And this one today, I haven't even seen the finished product yet. They just finished it yesterday. It's all done. It's called Embracing Your Passion. Why? And you're getting that today with this special. Why? Because, and this is a $40 value for free today, because I believe that people are just going through their life day to day, just ritually, just like Groundhog Day. Oh, it's another day. Eat the same food, do the same exercise, talk with the same people, wear the same type of clothes, same rituals. We need passion back in our life. So I found the people who I believe could make an enormous difference, some of the finest minds in behavioralism and philosophy in the world. And I brought them in and we filmed them for this special. Dr. Locke Kelly, Dr. Maggie Zibar, and We have Bruce Lipton. We have about seven of the finest people you could ever imagine. These are great people. These are people with large followings who do important work. So embrace your passion, but you have to know how to get there, how to stop looking at your life the way you have and look at it differently. Anyhow, this is the new self-empowerment video. Instead of having to buy it, you're getting it today when you call the number. I'm going to give you a number, and when you call this number, you're going to get your greens and grain stuff sent out today. I only have 2,000 cans, and this will go within about a 2-week supply. And you'll get the video. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Again, you're getting a superstar. You're getting greens and grains, the companion to green stuff. 877-627-5065. And as a bonus, you're getting the $40 value free. You're getting Embracing Your Passion, and you're getting both together for just the $59.95. You're saving $60. And this is a real fun, upbeat, positive, insightful lecture that I gave, and all these other experts that I edited in. It's beautifully edited. Just finished today. So we actually, our art director said, it's done. Got it ready to go. All right? Call 877-627-5065. You'll really benefit from it. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
I've heard people say that too much of anything is not good for you, baby. But I don't know about that. There's many times that we've loved and we've shared love and made love. It doesn't seem to me like it's enough. It's just not enough, baby. It's just not enough. Oh, oh, baby. My darling, I can't get enough of your love, baby. Girl, I don't know why. Can't get enough of your love, baby.
Let's see, Barry White. He had the passion going. Most people, listen to people who've got passion. Watch them have passion. I want you to have passion. In a few moments, we're going to go to Larry Doyle and talk about the Wall Street conspiracy to cripple the global economy. But before we get there, I'd like to share some thoughts about why I'm concerned when we have a dog and pony show, a farce that we call the State of the Union Address, and people actually take anything in it seriously. If we really cared, if this president really cared, first and foremost, he would have taken on the issue of not just saying $10 an hour, because he didn't say that he was going to stop the exporting of all the jobs leaving the United States through his friends, the very corporations that sponsored him and did in his two presidential campaigns, and the people who sponsored him in a senator race for the U.S. Senate, and the people who sponsored him, like Pritzker, who he made head of a major governmental department, Department of Commerce, of the hotel chain family. Now, he would have said the truth. He would have said, over the last 40 years, we have lost approximately 28 million jobs by corporate rating. These are leveraged buyout firms. We've cleaned them up in name and now call them equity partnerships. But the bottom line is this. They find vulnerable companies that they can squeeze profit from. They make their money on the purchase and loading it up with debt. And then they end up making their money up front. And then the average lifespan historically of these before the crash was 7 years and 2 months. Think of Linen Things. Think of Circuit City. Think of 2,700 corporations that were fine before they were taken over. And then all they did was try to downsize employees, shift the burden of responsibility away from creating quality products and services to paying the debt service. But these people became billionaires, Kravitz and the rest of them. And instead of stopping these companies from going overseas, we simply encouraged it. So now we have Walmart bringing us cheap products, but how many people lost their jobs in the process? I didn't hear him telling people, buy only what's made in the United States or can be proven to be made with fair, with real labor, where a living wage, $10 an hour is not a living wage. I mean, that's like saying, I'm only going to give you 100 lashes for talking back to me in Saudi Arabia instead of 300. You know, show me someone who can live for $10 an hour, $10.10. Oh, remember what he said, 10-10? Well, it's still poverty. It's still exploitation. And take a look at the actual workers out there. Let's just take a look at this. Airport workers, according to Lynn Stewart Paramore, the airport workers, they've had union busting, and they've had a lot of problems. There's 12,000 airport workers at LaGuardia Airport. They make $8 an hour, mainly as cabin cleaners. And big box store employees, millions, are working at Walmart, Taggart, Home Depot, and other giant retailers, that they're making an average of about $8 an hour. That's unfortunate, because how are you going to have those people have enough money in their pockets to go out and buy things that they used to have been able to afford without debt? They don't. Casino workers. You think about the people who lost their money at the blackjack table. Okay. What about the dealers? What about all the casino jobs, the drink servers? They're all either minimum wage or just a notch above. And in fact, in Louisiana, these tipped workers can be paid as low as $2.13 an hour. Fast food workers. Every time you go into a fast food joint, understand that the workers there are working at near starvation wages. The median income of a non-managerial fast food worker is a mere $8.94 an hour, and their average age is 28. Many of those flipping hamburgers are college graduates, some with master's degrees, or possibly even adjunct professors, that average $27,000 a year in salary. And yet, the public cost of workers who can't afford health care or even food to feed their families is enormous. That's $7 billion a year. Grandma aid, the home health aides, personal care aides, certified nursing assistants form a large group of minimum wage workers, and they don't receive overtime. The industry that they're part of is booming. Fast foods is booming. Casinos are booming. And yet the workers in these booming industries, according to the National Domestic Workers Alliance, are at minimum wage. Fishing industry workers. Again, jobs aboard fishing vessels, which include operating equipment and pulling in lines and preserving the catch. These are some of the most dangerous jobs in America. They still get minimum wage. Truckers. Truckers are paid by the mile in an outdated type of payment known as piecework. And because drivers don't get paid unless the wheels are moving, that driver receives payments that are very low indeed. They're way down on the pay scale. Construction and extraction workers. The people that own the construction companies, they get money. The people that are the people who put together the financial packages, the developers, they make a ton of money. But the workers, no. The medium hourly wage for day laborers is $10. Nail salon workers. You've all seen them. You walk up and down the street. The manicurists, pedicurists. There's a lot of them in the United States. Their average medium working, $9.24 an hour. Farm workers. Farm workers are not paid by the hour, but on the amount of work they do in piecemeal fashion, like buckets of berries. And they really work hard, and they're at minimum wage. And housekeepers and cleaners, the ones who make the beds, often don't make enough to live on. The recent case of an Indian diplomat accused of underpaying and abusing her housekeeper, that was just one little spotlight on an absolute epidemic of mistreatment. And so the average out there is $7.81 an hour. So for those who were cheering and applauding, and the two senators stood up last night and said, oh, look at what we're doing, 10-10. Well, compared to, you know, 7, it's an increase, but compared to actually being able to have one person stay at home and take care of the kids, having people have some quality of life, having money in your pocket to spend around a community as we used to, no, that's not going to happen. A living wage is what we need, but no one, in either the corporate Democrat or corporate Republican Party is about to venture that. But why am I really concerned about this comedy of errors that we call our Congress, our president, Washington? It's because of what they don't take responsibility for and what those who voted for them refuse to acknowledge. I'll give you a few examples, and then we're going to our guest. Didn't you hear Obama being cheered by the minorities, including the largest group that he was campaigning for? Not the African Americans. He had those. But the Latinos. He needed those. And so he made promise after promise. Didn't he say, quote, "Our journey is not complete until we find a better way to welcome the striving, hopeful immigrants who still see America as a land of opportunity, until bright young students and engineers are enlisted in our workforce rather than expelled from our country," end quote. Yeah, that's what he said. But Obama has deported 2 million undocumented immigrants, more than any other president in history. And in fact, the Immigration Custom Enforcement detained nearly 90% of undocumented immigrants in 2012 and beginning 2013 for non-serious offenses. And deportation has become so rampant that 61% of immigrant Hispanics said that deportation relief is more important than a pathway to citizenship. This past year alone, in an attempt to resist the craze, undocumented activists have chained themselves to the White House demanding not one more. They blocked deportation buses, interrupted Obama's speeches, and 30 even crossed the border, which resulted in 5 of them getting deported. So here we have a president that is claiming that he is for these people, and he deports 2 million of them. And then what about his relationship with Wall Street? It's incestuous. They gave him the big bucks, and he gives them the appointments they need, whether it's in the Federal Reserve or the Treasury, or any of the other Council of Economic Advisors. They're at his beck and call, and they have his ear. Just like Larry Summers, Timothy Geithner, Charles Paulson. These people, from most of them, and including formerly with Obama, or with Clinton, you had people right out of Goldman Sachs. I did a review with 2 attorneys, and it took about 9 months. We found over 200,000 lawsuits have been launched against Wall Street firms for every kind of criminal activity imaginable. They have paid these fines, smiled, and walked away. No reputation was harmed, and business as usual. If you and I committed these crimes, if we were serial offenders, we would be forever brandished and monikered with criminal activity. Why is it that the more criminal they are, the more crimes they commit, the more brazen they are? From money laundering, $800 billion, to price fixing, to fixing the LIBOR, they get away with it, and they get invited to everyone's party. And Obama has not gone after one single head of a single Wall Street firm. And then Obama's idea of reforming education is to privatize it. He puts Arne Duncan, who famously closed down dozens of public schools and pushed privatization for the rest of his tenure as Chicago school CEO. And then he heads the Department of Education. Corporate interest, that's all they care about. They care about the idea that teach a kid how to take a test, just don't teach him how to think. And he also has ramped up his embrace of the pervasive, illegal, corrupt, Orwellian surveillance state. And I went back and looked at his promises against the intrusion upon our Bill of Rights. Everything that Obama has done and the Congress has done and corporate America has done with him has been to eviscerate our constitutional rights and to make us into a police state. Obama is dedicated to secrecy and loving drones and doesn't take any responsibility for the 2,400 dead civilians. And he also is trying to ram through the Trans-Pacific Partnership in secret, which would virtually be the death knell for the rest of our society. And he hasn't stopped the racist drug war and discriminatory sentencing practices, and nor his friends that own the 4 private and profitable system of prisons in the United States. And then he continues to expand our secret ops and military footprint around the world. Gee whiz, what could possibly go wrong with his policies? Why weren't these discussed afterwards by the policy wonks, the Chris Matthews, the other people that pretend that they actually have a brain in their skull? I'm Gary Knoll. Those are my thoughts. Now let's say hello to my guest, Larry Dole, a true Wall Street insider. We'll forgive him for that for this interview. He's a former mortgage-backed security. You live in Connecticut. You got to be forgiven for that also. And we got to have you take a shower before you come into New York next time.
There you go.
He's worked, as I said, for Bear Stearns, the Union Bank of Switzerland, the Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, and its national sales manager for securitized products. He's also served as the chair of the Mortgage Trading Committee of the Public Securities Association. But that's when he was in that. Now he's turned himself around. He is the author of In Bed with Wall Street, The Conspiracy Crippling Our Global Economy, which has been reviewed as an essential read for understanding the shadow operations behind the Great Depression and how Wall Street and its revolving door with government continues to contribute to our ongoing economic crisis. Nice to have you with us today.
Gary, it's a pleasure to be on your show, and I thank you for the introduction and for having me on.
One of the major criticisms of Wall Street and the government financial oversight agencies has been the failure of due diligent investigation and regulation on banks' financial activities. And one person has stated about your analysis that it exposes how the entire country operates as a private fiefdom for Wall Street. So I'd like you to begin with a regulatory entity very few listeners have ever heard about, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, or FINRA, F-I-N-R-A, because this is supposed to be the primary cop on the beat to assure that investors are protected from fraud and waste and misappropriation of funds. And one reason why this is important is because a chair of the group, Mary Shapiro, was appointed by Obama to head the Securities and Exchange Commission, another agency with a long laundry list of failures in its responsibility to investigate Wall Street crimes, including Bernie Madoff. So tell us more about FINRA and its place.
FINRA really, in my opinion, is the intersection of Wall Street with Washington. And as you put out there, FINRA, to a very large extent, is an unknown entity for, you know, almost everybody in the country. And I would maintain, you know, the overwhelming percentage of people on Wall Street have little appreciation for the inner workings of FINRA. In short, FINRA is a self-regulatory entity. And what does that mean? That means that Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, every other large bank, as well as medium-sized and small broker-dealer, funds this organization so that FINRA can in turn regulate the industry. In order to, you know, on its face, it is loaded with conflicts of interest. In their defense, they do have an ombudsman, and they've got committees to address conflicts of interest. But you really need to follow the money, and that's what I've done extensively to see that that FINRA's regulation, as I maintain, they're little more than meter maids. And why do I say that? For an industry that that generates top line revenue of upwards $100 billion a year, what were the levels of fines that FINRA has imposed on average over the course of the last 5 to 6 years? About a little more than $50 million. That represents a half of 1% of Wall Street's top line revenue. So that either means that Wall Street is a very clean business, or that American investors aren't being protected. I think it's more the latter.
Tell us more about the woman who heads the Securities and Exchange Commission, Mary Shapiro.
Well, Mary Shapiro was President Obama's first chair for the Securities and Exchange Commission. She left just prior to at the end of last year, or the end of 2012, rather. And where did she come from? She came from FINRA. In my opinion, again, what they did was, I really believe that Wall Street itself effectively stated that, you know, we want Mary Shapiro to head the SEC simply so that we can, the industry could continue to control the oversight and the regulation. Her track record at FINRA was abysmal in terms of fines brought, cases that were brought against Wall Street, but she was the ultimate insider. What was interesting is she was also one of the wealthiest members of the Obama administration, with a net worth ranging somewhere between $11 and $42 million. And this for an individual who worked, she was a career regulator. How does one accrue that kind of earnings as a career regulator? She left FINRA to go to the SEC with a sweetheart deal that paid her out over $7 million. So, again, you see these themes where the regulators, the senior bankers, and the politicians all line their pockets, all do quite well. And this is where I get into the term that when you really follow the money and you connect the dots, it really is a conspiracy.
We continue to hear the mantra on major media networks and elected officials of too big to fail, too big to jail banks. What's the problem with this, and why, if we continue to believe this, is another meltdown and future bailout by taxpayers going to be inevitable?
Well, the problem with the fact that we've got a too big to fail, which means too big to regulate and prosecute and jail, is that justice is misdirected, which I maintain is ultimately justice denied. The fact that these institutions pay fines, even sometimes what appear to be large fines, but they're ultimately little more than a cost of doing business. And what is that? What is the message that gets sent to the American public? The message that is sent to the American public, and I could be cynical and say that crime pays, but the real message is double standard. A double standard, and that people aren't held accountable. And what does that do? That goes straight to eroding trust and confidence in the system. And trust and confidence, those are the cornerstones to our economy. You know, without trust and confidence, people are reluctant to commit capital, to take risk, to grow businesses. And so how do you get trust and confidence? As I maintain, you need the truth.
Why do you think that there are so few whistleblowers on Wall Street? There are over 200,000 people employed by Wall Street firms, yet we hear of so few whistleblowers who surely know of the corruption going on and must have a conscience to bring it into the attention of enforcement agencies. And therefore, how is the system rigged to limit whistleblowing?
Well, great question. I appreciate your asking it. You know, I think the general feeling throughout America is, you know, nobody speaks up, and that there's this code of silence. The problem is, what happens? There have been people who have tried to speak up, both at a junior level and a senior level. And what has happened to these individuals? They are ignored. Even worse, they're intimidated, at times physically, or very often they're fired. And, you know, when other potential whistleblowers see the way that these other individuals are treated, and what does that do? That puts a muzzle on them, which is exactly what both the industry and, I would maintain, the regulators even want. And why do I say that? Because under the recent Dodd-Frank Act, there's a whistleblower statute. But what does the SEC do? The SEC takes the information that the whistleblowers would provide, and where do they go with it? They go right back to the banks, and they say, you know, this is information that we've been provided. What do you think they do with that information? Obviously, they're going to go back to the SEC and say, we addressed it, but what else will they do? They'll say, well, where did you get this information? And they'll quickly connect the dots, and they'll find out, okay, who is the individual? And do you think that individual is going to be protected? So I maintain that we need a separate Office of Whistleblower Protection. So people who would, you know, not only protect the whistleblowers, but take their cases, because we need information to come out.
Not infrequently, we hear people charged by the FTC with insider trading. However, We're at a point now where the system has become so corrupt that even the regulators themselves engage in insider trading. Consequently, the flaws in the structural apparatus of our financial system enables, perhaps even encourages, illegal activity, and then completely undermines people's confidence to believe that they can make sound and safe investments in the financial market. So what are the structural mechanisms in place that enable insider trading and the release of financial data on traded companies for a select elite before markets open to the rest of the people?
You know, information is everything. I mean, information truly is everything. The ability not only to access information, but access it before other people are aware, that is now a huge industry, not only in Washington, but also elsewhere, where news organizations sell the access to this information, even oftentimes just mere seconds before it gets released to the public, for those who are willing to pay for it. Because what can they do? They can quickly go into the market and execute trades and make huge money. And what does this do? This just, again, sends the message to the general public, the game's not on the up and up. And if the game's not on the up and up, you know what? I choose not to play. And that's why a lot of volumes across many market sectors are down significantly. This is the essence of cronyism, but it's also the essence of why our economy continues to, you know, to suffer under the burden, because people are not going to commit their own capital if they feel it's not properly protected and that the field is a level playing field. And you know what? Shame on the administration, shame on the politicians who are lining their own pockets, and these regulators, you know, who aren't willing to stand up. This ultimately is a failure of leadership.
I absolutely agree. I just believe that the entire system of Wall Street in and of itself is self-serving and does not relate to the quality of life of the rest of Americans. They make money off money. They're not building factories. They're not encouraging a standard of life and quality of life and a standard of living and living wages. They're not suggesting that.
But Gary, we need to be careful. And why do we need to be careful? Because the economy, what is the lifeblood of the economy? It's credit. And where does credit emanate from? It does emanate, you know, in the financial markets. And so we need to have confidence in our markets so that credit flows. I would maintain that the overwhelming percentage of people on Wall Street are good people trying to make an honest living. But in my opinion, what's broken is the system is broken. The individuals who are running, you know, the banks, running the regulators, and running our government, that's where the problem lies, that conspiratorial behavior. And what's behind that? There's huge money and huge power. And that's why I wrote this book, to expose that crony corruption. We need to, you know, expose the cronyism so that true free market capitalism has got a chance here. And
free market capitalism I'm opposed to. Ethical capitalism I support. Gandhi, even...
I believe those are the same. I look at... I would equate free market capitalism that ethics need to be a precursor to that.
Because even Mahatma Gandhi suggested that ethical capitalism is essential. But
I'm with you on that.
I would share an additional thought. What you just suggested, I agree with. What I would offer a perspective on is, I believe that our problem is debt, and credit creates debt. Therefore, when you need credit to pay your rent, pay your car payments, people are kiting their credit cards now. They'll have 10 credit cards. They pay one bill with another credit card, spacing that out. But there was a time in America where we didn't have credit cards, and we had very little debt. We had a 13 to 15% savings. Today we have zero savings. So what if instead of all the profits flowing up to the top heads of the corporations and to their stockholders, that we improve the quality of living standards for the people working in companies? If more Americans made better wages and more of those profits went to help that, then the communities would survive and thrive. You wouldn't have to live off debt. Therefore, you didn't need the credit. You could live within your means. We did it. We did it for decades. And now people can't even think about living that way because they can't survive 1 week without money coming in. And so they live off debt.
Gary, that's going to be my second book.
Okay. Good. Larry, thank you for being on with us.
I appreciate you having me on. It's been a pleasure and an honor, and let's keep spreading the truth and bring some transparency to the process.
I appreciate it. Larry's website is Sense, S-E-N-S-E, on Sense, C-E-N-T-S.com, Sense on Sense. The book is In Bed with Wall Street. My guest, Larry Doyle, D-O-Y-L-E. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. And we don't have time today because we're running a little over to say hello to Luann, but we'll say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. I feel kind of special with that. Thank you so much. Today, a special guest presentation answering the question, what's behind the emergency management and forced bankruptcy of Detroit?
Good. That should be interesting. We look forward to it right now. Utrice Lead, please stay with us.